coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, the second day of June 2020. Shades of Detroit, 1967, the summer of 1968, with the exception, this is exponentially worse, by orders of magnitude much worse. And I don't see any end in sight now with 18,000, roughly 18,000 National Guard troops deployed across the United States, 140 plus cities being burnt down. Folks, understand this. These are not riots. This is an organized, and I stress organized, anarchy designed to bring down the United States of America. This is organized. This is well-funded, well-organized, and well executed. And at the epicenter of this is our police departments, and you and me. All right. So none of this is about, look, it's never about the spoon, right? I always say that. None of this is about George Floyd. None of this is about equality. None of this is about the knee on the neck. No. This has been planned. And remember when Obama said about his private army? Guess who you're seeing on the streets today? Folks, look, 7 years ago, I wrote about this. It's about to get very ugly. Of course, I was taken to task for that. 7 years later, open your shades of your window. I'm not going to delay any longer with me. Long awaited, always appreciated, and extremely educated and informative, Peter Barry Chowka. Peter, welcome to the Hagman Report. Again, thank you for joining me. I know I know you're extremely busy. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to just let you just download your stream of consciousness, and let's get to it, brother. Good to see you. Hey, hang on. We don't have audio. Are you muted?
Mike fell out of the picture.
Oh, there you go.
Is that coming through now?
Now we're cooking.
Everything I thought was perfectly set up except for my mic stand.
It's all right, man.
Okay, take two.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree with you more in your opening comments that I heard just now, and it is. It's a frightening time. And I think back to what Barack Hussein Obama said shortly before he was elected the first time in 2008. And he said, to paraphrase, we're a few days away from transforming America. And obviously he did his best or worst during the next 8 years to plant the seeds for that transformation. And notwithstanding the 3.5 years of the Trump presidency, the country has been transformed for the worst, and here we are. It's actually, today is the 3-month anniversary of the last time I was on the Hagman Report. It was back on March 2nd when I guest hosted the show for you. And there's been so much happening since then between the COVID-19 pandemic panic psyop, as I called it, and then this insurrection, which is chapter 2 of this big psyop to take down the country. But when I've come on the program in the past, as you know, I've always tried to connect the dots between the lines, looking at the historic view. But in my 55 and a half years of reporting on national politics and other issues, I've never seen anything come close to this. And as I said, the last 3 months, life has changed so drastically that our world is almost unrecognizable. Now, in the last 3 months, I have been very busy. At one point, in fact, in late March and early April, my work led to my latest and most intense, quote, 15 minutes of fame in a long, long time. And with it came literally thousands of hate messages and even threats of harm that were directed at me. A little bit more on that later. But I thought I would begin with sort of a chronological review of some of the work I've been doing on COVID-19 and then leading up to the insurrection. But here's the sum total of it in the last 90 days or so. 18 articles for American Thinker, an average about one every 5 days. 13 appearances on the Barry Farber radio show that started up again in January with me getting a weekly spot. And the last one I did was in late April, which was 13 days before Barry Farber passed away on May 6th, one day after his 90th birthday. And, of course, that was a very sad and disturbing event. I've made 4 appearances on John B. Wells's Saturday Night Terrestrial radio show, the one that goes out to 35-plus AM and FM radio stations around the country, and that's an interesting venue. And I've also been invited to be interviewed on the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, a total of 8 times. And I actually made it 4 times because you have to reply within minutes or seconds of getting the invitation on email or else they turn to someone else. Now, the BBC is the largest broadcaster in the world. And 3 of those appearances have been on BBC Television World News, the last one last Thursday. And I put 2 of them at my YouTube channel and would encourage people to go there and have a look at it. And there's an easy URL for that, which is tinyurl.com/PeterCMediaYouTube. That's Peter, letter C, Media, YouTube, one word. And the prefix is tinyurl.com. And tinyurl is one word. So tinyurl.com/PeterCMediaYouTube. And the short videos there from the BBC. But it's interesting because it's going into the lion's den. The BBC is a very professional operation. They're huge. They're programs go out worldwide, so you're getting millions of viewers on televisions around the world, but it requires a degree of finesse and nuance to navigate that and still to hold to your principles, which I always try to do. And fortunately, I've never been censored there or criticized by the BBC, and they continue to invite me back, but we'll see how long that goes. Now, in all of this work I've been doing the last 3 months, the picture of what's really going on is finally emerging clearly, more clearly. First, the COVID-19 pandemic was a psyop, probably until now, until this last week, the biggest psyop we've ever seen in this country. And now the insurrection following the death of George Floyd is chapter 2 of this psyop. Now, to cut to the chase right now, here's the lead takeaway from me for this hour. President Trump is facing the most significant headwinds against his reelection of any incumbent in the last century or longer, including Herbert Hoover in 1932 and Jimmy Carter in 1980. The Democrats, the media, the entire establishment are willing to destroy this country if it means getting rid of Donald Trump. And that's important because President Trump, not only President Trump, but his supporters and what most of us represent is the last bulwark against a final descent into the abyss of whatever label you want to put on it. Authoritarian, statist, globalist, communist control. We are this close now to falling off the edge, and if we do fall off, we will never recover. Now, I want to pause now to show a couple of videos, and they're brief, and I think it will there's actually some humor in this, I hope. Mm-hmm. But to get us rolling with this, actually the first one is a still frame of a video coverage from yesterday from MSNBC. And yesterday, President Trump, after addressing the nation from the Rose Garden in the early evening Eastern time about the insurrection and his plans to perhaps summon the military to take care of business here finally and put a stop to this insurrection, he walked over. He went out of the north portico front door of the White House, walked across the White House lawn or driveway, across Pennsylvania Avenue, through the park north of that, which had been the scene of pitched battles two nights before, in which 60 or more Secret Service agents were injured by this violent mob. And he crossed the street north of the park to stand in front of St. John's Church, the so-called Church of the Presidents. There's the photograph of President Trump for those of you watching. And standing in front of the church, which was an incredibly symbolic gesture, he's holding up a Bible. This is our president. And they wanted to destroy him. They've gone very far towards destroying him, if you believe the polls, and we shall see in November. But now, that to me was an incredible moment that I don't think I'll ever forget. I happened to be watching it live, and no one knew when he left the White House exactly where he was going or what he was going to do, except President Trump and the Secret Service. And there it was. Now, you would think that that would be a unifying gesture of comfort and support coming on the heels of his address to the nation moments earlier. But no, I discovered today how CNN and Anderson Cooper, that little queer, and I think that's a legitimate term now, right? We know LGBTQ rights. Well, what do you think the Q stands for? Queer.
Amen.
You goddamn little queer. Anyway, excuse me. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry, but
well, you know what? No, it's look, you're absolutely right. I'm not gonna stop you. But I'm telling you right now, if we don't get pissed off, and if we don't get emotional, if we don't get behind President Trump, we're lost. So go continue, sir.
Yeah, it really is up to us because everything is against us right now, except we hope, we pray, the people. All right, so here's how Anderson Cooper, I'll be more polite and call him just a little worm, discussed this action of President Trump. And this video runs about 1 minute, and then I'll introduce a brief follow-up video. But Eric, if you have that, please roll it now.
Here's CNN's Caitlin Collins. Caitlin, I understand you have some reporting about why President Trump pulled this stunt.
Yeah, we're learning more about what was behind this last-minute photo op. So last-minute, we should note that Secret Service rushed up here on this balcony where I'm standing right now, where CNN has been broadcasting for weeks now without any heads-up that they were coming up here because, of course, they wanted to have eyes on the president. And now sources are telling my colleague Kevin Liptak that, in part, the reason the president made this trip outside the gates of the White House, a really rare trip where you do not often see the president walk out of the front door of the White House, walk across Lafayette Square, and come over here to St. John's, was driven in part that he was upset by coverage of the fact that he had been rushed to the underground bunker on Friday night those protests that you saw breaking out here in front of the White House. That is what sources are saying, Anderson, part of the decision.
We are in trouble. This country is being led by a man.
He wanted to be seen outside the gates.
Of course he did. He was taken to a bunker, and, you know, he's hiding in a bunker. And he is embarrassed that people know that. So what does he have to do? He has to sic police on peaceful protesters so he can make a big show of being, you know, the little big man walking to a closed down church. And then, you know, he always talks about the world laughing, that the world are laughing at the governors right now. They're not laughing at the governors. They're standing in horror over what is happening. The only people that the world is laughing at is the president of the United States. And
yeah, well, there's CNN with their spin, and you see it's total fake news. And, of course, they've been avoiding covering what's really happening in the country, the devastation. There was one store in New York City yesterday that was looted, and that one store alone lost $2.4 million worth of merchandise. So it's pretty serious. But
they'll never recover. These stores that are being burned and looted will not recover.
Yeah, including maybe even in some of the areas like Soho in New York, that fashionable shopping area, or Madison Avenue, Fifth Avenue, Macy's, Herald Square. The flagship store was entered and looted last night, and cops were attacked when they tried to enforce the law there. This is a dystopian nightmare that 3 months ago you could not have predicted, but here we are. Now, I want to quickly follow up the Anderson video with this clip, because which I found, because it popped into my mind that President Trump holding up the Bible reminded me of the monster movies, the vampire movies of the 1930s and 40s, in which Bela Lugosi, who played Dracula, the vampire, would be finally confronted with someone holding up a holy relic, a Christian relic, usually a crucifix or a cross, and he would shrink back because that was the antidote to this evil vampire. So I found a clip of that, which runs just about 20 seconds. So, Eric, if you could put that on. And imagine this is Anderson Cooper, or this is Bela Lugosi playing Anderson Cooper in this clip.
More wolfbane, more effective than wolfbane, Count. Indeed.
Humor there. That,
yeah. I couldn't help but laugh at that. It's this is the great thing about YouTube. You can find almost anything there unless they censor it first, of course. Now, I mentioned earlier that President Trump is in a very, very difficult position. And the difference between his prospects, I would say, and the two failed presidents I mentioned, Hoover and Jimmy Carter, and you could probably throw LBJ in there too, because he was in pretty bad shape in 68 and he declined to run for re-election. The difference is that today, 50 years after LBJ, everything has changed. The media, the culture, and the people who are living within our country's borders. Now, Patricia McCarthy, American thinker, yesterday had an article which summarized that point brilliantly. She said, quote, "These riots seem to prove that, despite our protestations to the contrary, we do live in something of a third world nation," end quote. There's no longer a silent majority like there was 50 years ago when it prevented the Democrats from continuing their rule. Today, the news media is totally different. It's frighteningly different. I mean, it's absolutely impossible if you want to maintain your sanity, for example, to watch more than 30 seconds of CNN or MSNBC at a time. I mean, you'll wind up destroying your television because you're moved to that kind of violence within your home because it's simply become intolerable. And this has contributed to leading to this country and its people, most of its people, being ruled by emotion, exacerbated by political correctness. And this has infected even much of the conservative right. Now, I'd like to quote something that Dan Henninger of the Wall Street Journal said on Fox News this morning at 9:08 a.m. Eastern Time. And he was a classmate of mine, actually, at Georgetown back in the day. But he's a pretty smart writer and analyst, in my opinion. He said, and I quote, "The death of George Floyd has been corrupted by rioters and looters. Marchers, that is, these so-called peaceful marchers, have become a Trojan horse filled with an invading army of rioters and looters," end quote. And as you noted, Doug, they are not they are not a totally out of control army. Yes, some of them are. The ones, the neighborhood, the boys in the hood who are happy to loot, burn, beat, and kill, they're more spontaneous in their acting up because they're Obama's children, after all. They are young men, mostly, in their teens and early 20s, and the only presidents they've ever known are Obama, who gave them dog whistles for 8 years, that it was okay for them to act up, you know. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin, et cetera. And President Trump is the only other president they've known, who, of course, they've been brainwashed into hating as a racist or whatever. So, but, you know, at the controlling end, we have Antifa and unknown others. I mean, they're there in plain sight, wearing their black uniforms, carrying equipment of destruction, in many cases, driving in cars with out-of-state license plates. And what? There's nobody, the FBI, nobody can rein these people in, investigate them, charge them, prosecute them. I mean, what the hell's going on here? People were sent to prison or to jail a couple of weeks ago, ministers who didn't have government permission to conduct church services in person, or hairdressers who opened their salon against a governor's order, were actually sent to jail. And these terrorists, these domestic terrorists, are continuing to move around the country and do their horrible handiwork every night. And when President Trump announces an actual plan to do something about it, with the assistance of the Justice Department and his attorney general, he's now being called an authoritarian fascist by everyone in the establishment, including the news media.
Have you thought, Peter, just to ask you briefly, have you thought about the interesting coincidence of prisoners being released by, especially in Democratic states, by Democratic leadership, prisoners being released in advance of what we're seeing right now to make room for the hairdressers, to make room for the barbers and, you know, the business people who decided to open early?
Absolutely.
Isn't it interesting? Go ahead.
Well, I thought of that, certainly. And, you know, Doug, you may recall that it was 2 years ago. It was the summer and fall of 2018 that I was reporting in articles in American Thinker, the Epoch Times, and here in my, at the time, weekly reports on the Hagman Report about this Occupy ICE movement. And without dwelling on that, what it was a radical terrorist group which proposed not only getting rid of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, but no borders, no police, no prisons. And to my shock at the time, I mean, I didn't think I could be shocked anymore, but I was, the Democrat politicians in the left-wing controlled cities where Occupy ICE took root actually were endorsing these incredibly crazy, insane plans of closing prisons, opening the border to anyone, curtailing or ending the police. Now, this morning on Fox News, it was noted that commissioner or a member of the Minneapolis City Council, I believe it is, and I wasn't able to confirm her name. It went by me too quickly on the screen. I wasn't able to find it, but they showed a tweet of hers in which she said, this woman's in power right now, that we have to deconstruct the police in Minneapolis, deconstruct them, which means end the police, I guess. And meanwhile, the Fox News correspondent who's been on the ground there the past week or so covering the insurrection said that as you move around Minneapolis, you see graffiti everywhere saying deconstruct the police. So this is a new mantra of this terrorist communist left that wants to defund, deball, or deconstruct the police and probably the military too, and let the thugs take over. I mean, this is right out of the playbook of Nazi Germany and the brown shirts and the Gestapo and the Italian fascists of pre-World War II and World War II. And of course, as I reported here and elsewhere, just as an aside, the chief of Italian fascist who theorized a lot of this stuff was the individual who was studied most closely by Buttigieg's father, late father, the professor Buttigieg being one of the key candidates for the presidency in the Democratic Party. So this is how deep the left-wing lunacy goes. And it goes pretty deep as well. You know, de Blasio, Comrade de Blasio, the communist mayor of New York, his daughter, and I think we have a picture of her, Eric.
Dad's so proud of that. Yeah.
Dad tells a thousand words. Absolutely. In this case. Yeah. Okay, this thing, Chiara de Blasio, there she is, if you're watching, with Mayor de Blasio's arm around her, with her ring in her nose and her big rings in her ears and her
jingling.
I don't know what you would
pet.
Call that hairdo, but yeah, that's a trip. Know. And of course, she was arrested as part of these violent demonstrations, and supposedly the group of 100 that she was standing in the street with were throwing rocks and other harmful objects at the police. And I'm not sure that she was alleged to have done that, but the group she was with, they were doing that. So she was arrested for refusing to leave and her position blocking the street. And of course she was released very quickly. But Comrade de Blasio, the mayor, when he heard about her arrest the next morning from the media, he says, he expressed his pride and pleasure that his daughter was demonstrating and was arrested. So the apple didn't fall far from the tree. Meanwhile, we also have the case of the offspring of two other politicians. One of them is the daughter of the governor of Minnesota, whose name is Waltz, I believe. And he's a piece of work, of course. But his daughter, let me see, I want to make sure I get this right here so I don't libel anybody. But, okay, yes. Governor Waltz's daughter, Hope, tweeted warnings to rioters and looters that the National Guard would not be arriving anytime soon, so they could feel safe in their criminal activities. Can you believe this? And certainly. Ilhan Omar's daughter, one of our other favorite members of Congress there, Ilhan Omar's daughter, Isra Hirsi, I wonder if that's her daughter from her marriage to her brother. I'm not sure. But anyway, her daughter tweeted that she hates capitalism, and she retweeted a post from the Twin Cities Democrat Socialists of America, a hardcore Marxist communist group. She retweeted a tweet of theirs listing, quote, much needed supplies to help out your comrades protesting at the third precinct. That, of course, is the infamous precinct that was then looted, pillaged, and burned to the ground when the police abandoned it. Now, the list that she retweeted included obvious weapons, tennis rackets, hockey sticks, as well as plywood and anything else that could be used as shields against the police. Neither of these politicians, Governor Waltz or Representative Omar, has repudiated these public declarations of terror by these two offspring of theirs. And the source for this information is a blog at American Thinker yesterday, written by the founder, publisher, and editor, Thomas Lifson. So, as I said in quoting Patricia McCarthy earlier, we're living in a third world nation now. There's no doubt about it. And you cannot, you know, I heard someone in the media a day or so ago confidently saying, well, periods of insurrection like this, like 1968, are always followed by a conservative victory. I said, whoa, hold on. We are in a different world. We're on a different planet than we were in 1968 because we are now a third world country. So get ready for a third world, quote unquote, election.
Which, by the way, today was the primaries in Pennsylvania for those. Hopefully, did get out and vote, because voting has consequences. Go ahead, sir.
Now, I want to change gears a little bit before I get back into the insurrection and review a little bit about my experience with covering COVID-19. And because of the limitations of time, we really just have a short time. But I want to touch on this because this I learned a lot from dipping my toe in this story. It was back on March 21st. That I'd actually written several stories before then about the COVID-19 pandemic panic. But on March 21st, and that was pretty early on, I think that was before, a few days before the country really totally shut down. But Dr. Anthony Fauci at that point was starting to emerge as really the key spokesperson of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. He and Dr. Birx, but he was really the go-to guy. And he is well known around Washington because at age 79, he's had his job at the National Institutes of Health directing the NIAID, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, for 36 years. And that's the part of the NIH that had control over the war on AIDS. Now, I had covered, of course, the war on AIDS starting in the 1980s, and I covered Dr. Fauci quite a bit. So I've got the goods on him. So I published an article at American Thinker on Saturday, March 21st, and it had the title was kind of a hard-hitting title. It talked about him being a Hillary Clinton deep state stooge. And the article was more dispassionate. It the theme of the article, yes, Anthony Fauci, the NIH's face of the coronavirus, is a deep state Hillary Clinton-loving stooge. Now, that was a warranted headline because I had unearthed two of several emails that he had sent to Hillary Clinton, which were published by WikiLeaks in 2016 in their document dump of Hillary Clinton emails, in which he expressed his deep love for Hillary Clinton and his support for her, and his comment that he was brought to tears by listening to Hillary Clinton's testimony on Benghazi when she was finally called to Capitol Hill to testify on that debacle. I believe it was January 2013, if I'm correct there. Anyway, you know,
so was I, but for different reasons. Go ahead.
He's a Hillary Clinton deep state loving stooge. You know, that's just the way it is. Well, the next week, the salvos started. I got hit by Politico and by BuzzFeed. I mean, by name and links. And then the Washington Post picked up on this in the first of four articles that referenced me by name, by links, followed by two articles in the New York Times, one of them on page one of the Sunday edition. And the Times and the Post are among the top websites in the world. And these six articles in those two publications, which are also syndicated all over the world, at the Times and the Post alone generated over 50,000 reader comments. And I would say 99% of them were hateful and negative, with many of them mentioning me directly. And suddenly I'm getting hundreds of Twitter messages, tweets, emails, not only hateful, but downright threatening. And I wondered when the storm would pass. And of course, eventually it did. But really, it goes all over the world. And an interesting aside here is that a subsequent article I wrote was about how there are elements on the left side of the political spectrum that are equally disgusted with Anthony Fauci, that deep state Hillary Clinton loving stooge. For example, the group that is founded by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a Democrat, progressive through and through. But he also happens to be anti-vaccine. He's an anti-vaxxer. And I never thought I would agree with him, but I do on this issue because he's done, he and his team at childrenshealthdefense.org have done exceptional work in recent years in exposing the likes of Anthony Fauci in the current time. My contribution, I would like to think, to, yes, there's the article. The progressive left also has serious problems with Dr. Fauci. And this group, childrenshealthdefense.org, has issued several videos, one of them currently on YouTube, 7 minutes long with only 24,000 views, really takes Fauci on like I never did. I mean, really, really exposing him so that he's exposed fully with what he has done in terms of creating death. And I never made that allegation. I looked at my take on him was how he presided over the creation of an AIDS establishment, which despite the small factor of AIDS in terms of its death toll, its incidence toll and its death toll, came to rival in terms of spending at the national government level on things like cancer and heart disease. Thanks to Fauci and his ilk at the NIH, our country, the United States government, over the last four decades has spent two-thirds of $1 trillion on research into HIV/AIDS. And meanwhile, only about 500,000 people in the United States over four decades have died of AIDS. I say only because the death toll from cancer during those years is at least 20 million or more. I mean, orders of magnitude greater. And the amount of money spent per death on AIDS is something like 100 times as much as is spent on diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. And I unearthed a chart exhibiting this in my Fauci Stooge article, which displays this graphically. And it's from an article I wrote for an online publication about 15 years ago. And I updated the statistics, however, to show that the graphic is still relevant today. And this is what, of course, it's this material, the content of my article, the Stooge article, the Fauci Stooge article, that was completely ignored and avoided by the Washington Post, the New York Times. I was also taken on by Clarence Page, the Chicago Times, nationally syndicated columnist, New York Magazine, Vanity Fair. I mean, it was really rolling there for a while. So it's really something to be in there's the chart. You see at the left, it has deaths during the AIDS epidemic. Now, the big tall charts, the big numbers, that's from 1981 to 98, like 14 million from heart disease, 9 million from cancer, 1.8 million from prescription drugs, 410,000 from AIDS. The AIDS chart, the AIDS one is very small. And then on the next, the lower one, we have research dollars per patient. $28 per patient who dies from diabetes, $78 per patient who dies from Parkinson's, $108 heart disease patient, $230 breast cancer patient. And when it comes to AIDS, for every death from AIDS, the government spent $2,400. Because AIDS, thanks to Dr. Fauci and his ilk, had been construed as the ultimate politically correct disease. And what they were doing here in AIDS and in everything since, MERS, Zika, the various other things they've looked for drugs for and tested out their, beta tested their plans, was what we saw come to full flower with the COVID-19 PSYOP pandemic. They started this game 40 years ago, and they've learned it very well now that they've got the media in their pocket. So I just want to quote briefly from this Washington Post article, because this is the crap I had to put up with for a couple of weeks. This is quoting the first Post article, which ran 5 days after my American Thinker article on Fauci the Stooge. Peter Barry Chalka, whose Twitter bio boasts that he's been retweeted by the president. Oh, my God, I'm guilty. Recently referred to Fauci, who has advised multiple presidents of both parties as a deep state Hillary Clinton loving stooge, end quote. Trump has not brought these attacks to his own Twitter feed, but he has surfaced previous pieces by Chalka, including praise for Sean Hannity of Fox News. Oh my God, I plead guilty.
Next. How dare you?
In
the words of Greta, how dare you?
Lock him up. The attempt, or censor him, right? Next, continuing, the Washington Post. The attempt to discredit Fauci draws on a resource for which Trump has professed his love, WikiLeaks. Among the emails hacked by Russian agents and released by the anti-secrecy organization in 2016 was a message Fauci sent in 2013 to one of Clinton's top aides, Cheryl Mills. Fauci praised the Secretary of State's stamina and capability during her testimony before the Congressional Committee investigating the 2012 attacks on Benghazi. By the way, the Post writer, who's also a Rhodes scholar, by the way, interesting, he didn't mention that Fauci was brought to tears at watching Hillary's testimony. He mentioned that in his email to Cheryl Mills, which Hillary saw, obviously. Continuing, the same hacked email, by the way, of course, we know that the email, there's no evidence it was hacked, right? It was leaked. The same hacked email was the centerpiece of Chalka's piece, which appeared over the weekend on the conservative blog American Thinker. Other publications, by the way, were not so kind in their description of American Thinker, so I at least have to hand it to the Post for that. Continuing, followers of the American Thinker have not received the message. That refers to a previous paragraph I omitted. Chalka's piece, I had to be proud of this, confirmed by the Washington Post. My friend Raleigh James, when she read that, she said, Peter, you should be thrilled because here's the Post validating your impact. Quote, Chalka's piece has generated nearly 20,000 interactions on Facebook alone. By the way, the next article in the Post about that quoted me upped it to 25,000 interactions. So I don't know what the final number was, but at this point it was 20,000 in late March. 20,000 interactions on Facebook alone, more than the typical well-performing story in the mainstream media. It has gained particular traction in Facebook groups devoted to Fox News personalities, suggesting an overlapping audience. So, you know, I mean, Fox News is really persona non grata among these punks. So they're, you know, they're lumping us all in together there. Now, it also says, quote, the attacks have spread to other right-wing sites where Fauci stands accused of trying to turn the United States into, quote, a police state like China in order to stop the coronavirus, end quote. That was not my quote. It was somebody else's quote, but, you know, I have to agree with it. And on and on. I mean, this went on for a couple of weeks there, these articles trickling out. And, you know, when I would Google my name at Google News, I would see the same articles reprinted in New Zealand, Australia, Ireland. You know, I'm now besmirched worldwide with this reputation of a tinfoil hat wearing radical who can't see the importance and validity of the great white Dr. Anthony Fauci. I guess he's the combination of Mother Teresa and Dr. Schweitzer of our time or something. I don't know. But this is it's pretty amazing what goes on. So, you know, I don't want to belabor the point there. It actually, looking back on it now, it's kind of funny, and it's another badge of honor, really. But really teaches you, if you didn't realize it already, I mean, it's really in your face, the complete debasement of the mainstream media and how corrupt everything is. So now, 4 weeks later, exactly, I wrote a bunch of articles on COVID-19, but one of the follow-ups, which I really liked, was called, Will the COVID-19 PSYOP Succeed? And I just want to read a couple of sentences from this because I spent a lot of time crafting this. And I wrote, from the outset of this story of the ravages of the COVID-19 pandemic, I have been cautious about coming to conclusions about what's really going on. Now, just to pause there. In March, when this really started to hit the fan, of course, there was total BS and conflicting BS from the mainstream news media, as we know. You know, don't wear a mask, then suddenly not only wear a mask, but you're going to be fined if you don't wear a mask, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, even on the extreme left and the extreme right, there were some people who, in my opinion, went off the rails and started making claims and predictions that they didn't really have. I mean, I prefer to wait until I could validate the information. So that's what I meant here. But I've been cautious. The information coming out of communist China has been corrupted and unreliable from the beginning. And the inconsistent reports and estimates from the American medical experts engaged in virus mitigation have also clouded a clear picture from emerging. 5 weeks into the country shut down due to the coronavirus crisis at that point, however, it looks unmistakably like a big psyop, a psychological operation designed to entrance people for the purpose of hidden agendas. The whole thing, in fact, has morphed into what it was intended to usher in, a bare-knuckles political ideological battle for what our future will be like. And I quoted in that article something I heard in the media, something I heard a small business owner say at the time, which said it better than anything I could, so I quoted her. She said, quote, "I'm no longer concerned about losing my life. I'm concerned about losing the life that I have built." I don't know how you could say it better than that in so few words. Now, later I wrote about the mandatory coronavirus vaccination looming on the horizon. And unfortunately, President Trump has been beating that drum now. He has said that he doesn't want to see it mandated. But even if the government doesn't put a gun to your head to take the vaccine, a vaccine will, if and when, or when and if it's approved, will be required for your new immunity passport. That would be a prerequisite to travel, to work, to attend school, and to do who knows what else. And as I've said, President Trump has been mentioning the vaccine every time he talks about COVID-19, although in the last week, COVID-19 has been blown off the media by the insurrection. I mean, who would have thought that could have happened? And it did. Now, in the closing minutes here, I want to spend a little time on a story that I believe I helped to break this past weekend, and it's ushered in another tidal wave of assault against yours truly, including from the conservative right. Now this article that I wrote at American Thinker on Saturday was encouraged by what I read the day before in the press, which was about the news conference held last Thursday, in which the prosecutor at the time, the county prosecutor in Minneapolis, Attorney Mike Freeman, said, quote, "There is other evidence that does not support a criminal charge against former cop Derek Chauvin," who was obviously arrested the next day. He further said, this prosecutor, "We need to weigh through all of that evidence to come through with a meaningful determination, and we are doing the best of our ability," end quote. Now, meanwhile, everybody was saying then and now that the case is closed. Chauvin is guilty. There's no question, having seen the 8-minute video of former cop Chauvin with his knee perhaps resting on, perhaps heavily on the neck of the unfortunate victim in this case, Mr. Floyd. People who saw that video, including the likes of Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and everybody else, have said, case closed, he's guilty, charged him with first-degree murder, and as Savage said, execute him. And I mean, I'm not, of course, purporting to stand up in defense of former cop Chauvin, but I thought we lived in a country where you're innocent till proven guilty, and that until a trial is held before a jury of your peers, you're presumed innocent, even if there is a preponderance of some video evidence, which everybody jumps on that bandwagon and says you're guilty, especially since it has been used as the excuse to loot and burn most of the country. Now, this article that was published the next day in the Minneapolis press alluded to the arrest warrant for former cop Chauvin. I was arrested on Friday last week. So I went and read that that arrest warrant, and I wrote a story May 30th at American Thinker titled George Floyd's Preliminary Autopsy raises the question, was this another rush to judgment? Because that arrest warrant, that 5 or 6 page arrest warrant, included a paragraph about the autopsy of Mr. Floyd, which was the first time we'd gotten any official word on that autopsy, even though this was a preliminary account. And this is an official government document. And it said, and I quote, "The combined effects of Mr. Floyd being restrained by police, his underlying health conditions, and any potential intoxicants in his system likely contributed to his death." There is a screenshot of my article, or the article with a small screenshot in the middle that is the direct screenshot from that arrest warrant official complaint document. So here's some of the response that I got. I mean, you can imagine, of course, what I got from the left, but I happen to know two of the top three radio talk show hosts in the country, and I don't want to name them here because I don't have the permission of one of them to quote him. But here is what one of these top talk show hosts emailed me when after he read my article. He said, "I am shocked that you would publish such rubbish. The KKK may want the link to your article." To which I responded, "I think it's possible to have compassion for George Floyd and his family, and also to hope that the cop gets the sentence he deserves according to the evidence and the law. If you read my article, I did not take a position on the cop's guilt or innocence. In fact," well, I quoted, of course, as I said, the arrest warrant, but I also, to this correspondent, I said, "In fact, I quoted at length about Benjamin Crump, the Floyd family attorney, and mentioned that he had hired Dr. Bodden to do an independent autopsy." Well, the reply I got to that email was, "What you wrote is deranged." And then further, this individual wrote to the publisher of American Thinker and tried to get me fired from the publication. So this is more of the crap I've been putting up with to try to tell the truth in situations from the left and the right. So if I seem like I've had it up to here, I have had it up to here. And, you know, soon it's going to be all hands on deck just to save your own life, because as you said, I think on the air, but briefly when we chatted off the air earlier, Doug, it's coming down to it, and the Civil War is here. Civil War 2.0 is here, and God help us, because we are in very, very deep trouble.
You know, you went over this, Peter. I think it's important for people to understand the reason why, and you the reactions, the responses are important because, look, I've been living this. The platform has been living this for the last 5 years, roughly, at the very least. And this is this portends what everyone is going to be experiencing, Peter. I mean, it's not about us. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about all of us.
And we're surrogates for President Trump.
Right, exactly.
Although not on the conservative right, but those people I just don't understand. I mean, you know, Sean Hannity, for example, for more than a month was in bed with Anthony Fauci. And when I sent them his producer and shows it to Sean, my stuff, I got no response at all. And they're blowing with the wind. And this other individual is I just don't understand it at all. I mean, I think it's a bipolar response, in my opinion, or a response of a bipolar individual, to put it charitably. But, you know, it was 25 years ago that actually more than 25 years ago that I got on the Internet for the first time. I was an early adopter of the World Wide Web. And one of my first email addresses was the provider I was using at the time, Real Media. And that was also the title of one of my early websites in 1995, where I put my articles up. And that's the story of my life. I've been trying to tell the real story without fear or favor, without an ideological preference. But of course, in later years here, the ideological preference is for the conservative right, because that's where the truth is. And Before we break here, I would like to recommend and hope that people will be interested in reading some of my articles. They're all available for free. There's no cost. And make my work available freely. On these archive pages, a lot of ads do pop up, but that has nothing to do with me. That's American Thinker. But if you go to my little one-page website, which is peter.media, peter.media, it has links there to my articles from 2018 at the Epoch Times, which I am very proud of. And lately, they are cutting down on their freelancers, so they're not as open to having outsiders write for them anymore. They're under the gun, like most of the media, unfortunately.
It's a liability issue, is my understanding.
But it also it has links to my 250 articles in American Thinker, and it really helps to read and to follow the links if you're interested in this material. A lot of work goes into each of these articles, and I really try to base them on the facts, the data, and the primary sources, which is why the shocking critiques made to me. I'm not above criticism, of course, but these criticisms out of hand that I'm KKK for saying that these cops should cops should get a fair trial. I mean, what the hell is going on here? You know, this is a lynch mob, literally, on both ends of the spectrum, or some ends of the conservative right. So, you know, as I said earlier, I think today emotion rules, exacerbated by political correctness, and it has infected even the conservative right. I would also really like it if people checked out my Twitter account, which has come under some censorship recently, and some of my tweets have been the links have been disallowed, and that is simply twitter.com/pchowka, twitter.com/pchowka. And once again, you don't have to be a member of Twitter. You don't have to have an account there to see all of my tweets, to follow the links, and there's about 800 tweets, and I've tried to link to everything I've published or broadcast since 2018. So that's a little compendium and archive of my work linking to the primary sources. And proudly at the very top is the retweet I got from one of the two retweets I got from President Trump to my articles in 2018. And as I mentioned in passing earlier, my YouTube channel, which is tinyurl.com, Peter C. Media, YouTube. So I hear the music coming up. So, Doug, it's been a pleasure. And God bless you and members of the Hagman audience. And I always appreciate your prayers from this prayerful audience. So until next time, goodbye and God bless.
Let's not make it another 3 months. Peter, thank you so much. May God bless you and protect you now and in the days ahead. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doug.
Okay, be right back, folks. Network break, top of the hour, HagmanReportLive.com. That's HagmanReportLive.com. That's where to go, as well as HagmanReport.com. Thank you, Peter Barry Chowka.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to say thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform and me. I got to tell you something. I'm I get a lot of emails. I read them all. And again, thank you for your emails. Thank you for your support of this platform. And I mean that. If there was ever a time where we were in need of your support, it is now. It is now. And I want to thank you for that. Last week, I think it was Friday, Mancow Mueller on Twitter said it all. Of course, Mancow was on a week prior on this platform on the Hagman Report, but his Twitter feed, he wrote this. The question of why anyone would need an AR-15, well, it's being answered in every city tonight. And there it is. Folks, I'm going to tell you something. We are really in the inception of a second civil war in this country. It's being orchestrated. It is not organic. There's nothing that you see, with the exception of the stragglers here and there, but none of this is organic. When I pick up the phone and talk to a cop in my city, and he said, look, four or seven businesses were vandalized in my city. And he said, do you know that the people doing the, people that were behind the actual property destruction were from out of town? Yeah. This is happening all across America, and it's only going to get worse. When I spoke with Peter earlier today, I was talking about Detroit, 1967, the summer of 1968, 70, Kent State, 50 years, by the way, this year. I don't know how many people remember those times. This is much worse. 2013, I wrote an article. It was cited by Glenn Beck. In fact, he read it on his show on Fox. It's about to get very ugly. Now, I was talking about a number of different things, and perhaps not in the context as we're seeing today, obviously. But that was called fake news. And today it's still being called fake news. Open your shades, look out. And against the backdrop of the flames of the cities, understand that you and I, we're all getting played. And I do hope, I really do hope that you, everyone out there, has taken our advice to prepare. Look, we know how this is going to end. God is in control. I understand that. And with me is Stan Dale. And I don't want to take any time away from Stan, and perhaps we can talk about what's going on. But I think if anyone right now has any, designs on this ending anytime soon. No. Look, the Ferguson riots lasted for, I think, 11 and a half, 12, a year, roughly. That's how long they lasted. But you don't hear about that. You don't hear about how long and how many buildings were burnt down then. There was an anarchist who shot a police officer in the head from behind in Las Vegas. Of course, that communist rat bastard, Bill de Blasio, siding with the anarchists. Serious times, folks. Stan Dale, welcome.
Good to be here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Wasn't sure about that. Oh, gee. Hey, Eric, I've ordered those studio lights you talk about so that I'm not looking like a beat. I'll see what I can do to kind of fix it on this end anyway. Wow. Boy, that looks bad.
The way I look at it, Stan, is anytime you're on, no matter what you look like, you always look good. Just my
best. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. You flatterer.
I figure everyone can't look as dapper and nice as me. Oh, I'm kidding. No, you look good, though. Seriously.
Oh, well. All right. Thanks for that. Boy, there's a lot of stuff I've been having this week. I suppose you've been covering the heck out of all the riot stuff, right?
Pretty much, yeah. What can you say about this? I mean, you know, Stan, what do you think? I'm out of words, man. I'm out of words. I don't know.
I noticed several of the commentators, either guest or news hosts today on Fox, were saying the same thing. I don't understand. I do not understand. I was watching one of the policemen out there say, I just don't understand what's happening here. And for those of us for years have been watching the communist infiltration of our country and various organizations within it and various levels, this is nothing short of fifth columnist, you know, Antifa type actions to overthrow. It's a coordinated effort to overthrow the U.S. government through revolution or civil war. And I've been talking about this with you for several years now. In fact, probably even one of my books years ago. The next thing I expect to see is, you know, martial law, or at least bringing the military into various threatened cities. And although I support that action because of what we see, it's going to produce, you know, polarization in our population. Already we have the left-right type polarization, but this is going to accent that, and the polarization is going to lead to our you know, civilians. This is going to be weird. You won't know who's your enemy until it's too late, probably, but they're threatening now then to go into suburbs and into smaller cities so that people won't feel safe anywhere. This is the people organizing these riots. And I, you know, this is the first stage in destroying America. You've got spies or fifth columnists inside the country instigating things that will produce civil disobedience. And we're certainly seeing it on the side of the people that are doing this to us. And after that, we'll, you know, the foreign enemies like Russia, China, one Middle Eastern one like Iran or maybe even Saudi Arabia, will attack us when we're at our weakest. We've been clobbered from within the gates of our castle, you know, our island America. And these guys are nothing more than, you know, enemy combatants, in my opinion, and should be treated as such. I know that's
yes, no,
but it's the truth. And I also know that we're not going to stop what's coming. We can do our best to slow it down, but it's gone too far now. We've let it come into our country too much. And I'm sad to see this, Doug. Did you cover that side of it?
You know,
show already.
Well, in bits and pieces, but I think it needs to be. Yeah. I think you know, we really need to drill down on what's happened. Back last summer and before sure. that, I just real oh. quick. Can you hear me? Okay, I wasn't sure. Real quick, we had Diana West on. Who wrote A Red Thread, the book A Red Thread, and it's about the communist infiltration of our institutions and the institutional communism that we have, and with the Islamic threat and the communist threat. And this is all being, I think today what we're seeing is the culmination, or at least the initial part of I'm getting a lot of feedback. I apologize. At least the initial part of the efforts again to take down the United States and to take away our republic by people like Obama, Jarrett, what was that AG's name? Holder, Eric Holder, and so on. That whole, along with the former people, Bill Ayers, you know, the Weather Underground. I mean, this is their wet dream. What's going on right now? So anyway, that's kind of, to answer your question very lengthily, if that's a word, that's what I feel. Can you hear me? Listening on. I think we might be, folks, I think we might be having a problem with our connection with Stan Dale. Eric the Tech, what do you think?
Yeah, I think his input changed.
Okay.
His headset. Yes.
All right.
I think he's having some issues.
You want to just reconnect or do something, or?
Yep. I'll reconnect.
Right. We can just talk amongst ourselves, just me and the audience. So while we're getting Stan Dale back, this has been, the last several days has been really eye-opening, I think, and a very interesting. What words can you even use when you look outside and see what's going on? I just want to get a couple of things here. For example, that I think are important for people to know. Some people are talking already about reparations for the black community, the white privilege, even the whites, the non-blacks, non-people of color, whatever terminology, saying, well, you know what, this is understandable. The rage is understandable. You're white. You don't know what it means or what it feels like to be a person of color. I'll tell you what, I think over the last couple of decades we've done it. Done pretty well with respect to equality, and just yell, Eric. I'll shut up when you have them. What Stan said about the riots, the anarchists, the anarchy coming to the suburbs, that is a real thing. I can tell you right now, plans in my hometown, and I'm sure it's not limited to my hometown, folks. It's going to happen. There will be assassinations of white families, executions. Maybe that's the better word for it. There's no good word for it. The stores in the suburbs are going to be targeted. It's not going to be necessarily all of the suburbs, but quite a few. The communications that have been intercepted already, and this includes on message boards. That's right. Targeting the suburbs. If your city is not in flames or hasn't been affected, impacted yet, just wait. It will be. Go out and try to buy a firearm today. According to the information, open source, as well as just various individuals who contribute information to this platform, it's difficult to find any weapons and ammunition. People are arming up. Now, you remember this happened before at different times, but this is a lot different. Do you think, let me ask you, why do you think people who had never, ever, ever owned a gun before are starting to look for and even purchase, in some cases, guns where they can?
Stan has to reboot, just so you know.
Okay. I just didn't want to take any time away from him. So.
Nope. Continue and.
Just yell. All right. Can, by the way.
EMP shield too.
Oh yeah. And by the way, it's Eric the Tech's birthday tomorrow. He's going to be 35 years old. He's my son-in-law. He's the technician.
Turning 16.
Again. Twice. So. You know what? I'd be lost without Eric Tech. So if you get a chance, wish him a happy birthday. Just send him an email. Or pat him on the back when you see him.
Matt sent me a funny email. I shouldn't say funny, a nice email. Thank you, Matt.
There you go. You want to give out your email address?
People can search for it.
That's right. Or studio. It's actually eric@hagmanreport.com.
Yes, it is.
So anyway. You know, look, life will go on. Here's the other part of this. Life will go on. Businesses will still continue to run in most cases. Some areas, and this is going to be this will be geographically different, diverse. All right. So does this apply to, I don't know. What do they used to say? Podunk, Idaho, or whatever? Not necessarily, okay? Your mileage will vary based on your location, your city, your state. But I can tell you this, where it's going to be the worst is in the leftist or democratic leftist-controlled cities and states, counties. It's going to be bad. on college campuses. Again, your mileage will vary depending if the campus is in session, if they're ever going to open up because of the COVID. Now, go back to hour one when we were talking to Peter. Do you find the timing with the Communist Chinese Party virus, the timing behind that and what we're seeing now, do you find the timing a little curious? Do you find that the timing about the release of prison inmates to jail the store owners a little curious? And now letting out the prisoners? How about the timing, or how about this? We saw the sudden appearance.
We upstand.
Oh, okay, good. We saw the sudden, I just finished the thought. We saw the sudden appearance of bricks and other weapons of opportunity given to the anarchists placed there. Follow the money. Who put them there? Who paid for them? Where'd they come from? Easily done. And I think you'll find answers. And I think the answers go to the usual suspects. The usual suspects. You've got the fingerprints of George Soros. You've got the fingerprints of Barry Satoro. You got the fingerprints of Eric Holder and everyone like him and everyone of like-mindedness. And I'll tell you what, this is an ideological divide that will not be healed, at least not in this generation. All right. Back to Stan. Stan, sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but glad to have you back.
Good to be back. I don't either. I had to reboot my system because my microphones, headphones, everything went dead. I just replugged some stuff here after I rebooted, and it seemed to have solved the problem.
Business
anyway, sorry about that.
No, no worries. It's, you know, I'm going to be getting bills from guests for having to replace computer equipment because of, you know, it's this platform. But anyway, go ahead. Yes, you know.
All right. Having said that about the Civil War threat and then the invasion of the United States, I think we're very close to losing the country one way or another. And certainly President Trump is aware of the dangers of a civil war. In at least he looks like he's going to be strong enough to stop it, or at least try to stop it with military force. I know it's a big step, but I think what he was doing in front of that church yesterday was just saying, okay, guys, I'm here, you know, and I'm going to use what is necessary to protect the people of the United States and the infrastructure that these people are trying to destroy. What a bunch of bad actors. Anyway. Mm. All right, I'm going to get on to some other things here. You watched the Dragon space launch, didn't you?
I did, and I believe you had sent me a reminder. Didn't you?
Might have done.
Okay.
Might have done. I don't know. I did remind a few people. And, you know, on my show images page, images 52 through 54 and image 48 are all interesting. I think I'll start with 48. It's about the Dragon launch. You click on 48. It on the picture or the text there, it gives you a picture of the Dragon capsule on you know, the space center there at Kennedy Space Center on the pad 39A from which it launched. And it's just kind of a neat thing when you look at that. It's a beautiful shot showing this really fancy, kind of like a even better than you get at the airport type walkway out to the Dragon capsule for the astronauts to enter. And I thought that a number of the things that I saw on this, in addition to being high tech and a little bit like 2001, all kind of nice and white and black trim and pristine, is that they have built into this capsule emergency systems to protect the crew and the cargo, which we didn't have before in the earlier NASA Apollo missions, not like this to this degree. In the very early missions of NASA, they had a rocket with struts on it over the top of the capsule so that they could pull the capsule away from the rocket if it exploded on the pad and get a few feet away to safety. But these guys have taken extraordinary precautions with like slides, you know, flying fox type, you know, slides that leave the capsule area. If you have to get out of it, if there's a malfunction before you've been locked down, you can slide down to safety real quick, you know, several hundred, actually a couple thousand feet away from the thing so you're not killed at, you know, caught fire or anything like that. But once you're locked in like this, and you're committed to the countdown, and then the thing explodes, let's say the missile explodes or just takes off and starts to lose control and veer off or whatever, the ground control and the occupants of this capsule can push a button and blow the top capsule you see there in the shot free and clear of the missile and steer it off at about 2.5 times the speed of sound off to the side, so it's away from the action of the explosion real quick. And when it's clear, then a drogue chute opens up and retros fire, and it comes back down to Earth, and the crew is saved. So I think the safety precautions here are really an enormous improvement. Having said that, let's go now to slide 52. And this reminds me of 2001 Space Odyssey again, that the little pod that they used to have inside for, you know, that spherical pod for people to, the astronauts to go outside the Odyssey and look at things and fix and repair communications or whatever. This looks very, very much like that, even though it's a cylindrical rocket or capsule with, you know, kind of a conical front end here. And what you see here was taken as the astronauts at Dragon were just being led in to the docking port of the International Space Station. It was a brilliant shot, and I just snapped it on my iPad as it came up. Slide 53, you next see this thing connected to the port on the space station, on the guest port there, which in itself was quite a feat of engineering for us to have the Dragon's equipment on the end of it, the port clamps and things, match perfectly to where they need to be for this, you know, port entry here so they could all lock together and not wander off or break the seal. And then if you go to slide 54, I snapped this just as the first astronaut from Dragon, Bob Behnken, entered the space station. Now, of course, they weren't really going to practice social distancing there. I guess they assumed that they had been cleared on the ground and in space station as well. And they all got a lot of hugs and shaking of hands and posed for a picture later. Now, right about here and a few minutes after this, when Bob is in the space station there with, the crew, he said something which I just heard the glimpse, the merest part of. And somebody emailed me about it, and another guy phoned me about it. Did you hear what he said about the technology which got him to the space station? How it was archaic, you know, that crude missile and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've said this all along, that our technology is being limited to thrust reaction Newtonian-type mechanical devices to, you know, use like a rocket-type thing to get us to where we're going and to dock. And yes, this struck home with me. I thought, right, when we're looking at a great deception, which I've talked about many times, where our technology, the epitome of it is this that we're looking at here, and, you know, these crude rockets, you know, basically they're very sophisticated, but they're crude in terms of intergalactic or even interstellar propulsion. We think that this is the extent of our technology, so that when flying saucers or flying cigars, quote-unquote alien space brothers or whatever, appear on the scene here soon, there's no reason for us to think that it has anything to do with Earth technology or with us making a deal with these beings in the past or covering up their technology. It's meant to be this way, to focus your attention on the rather early stages of space propulsion that our Earth technology is in, allegedly. And for him to say that about archaic, it kind of clued me that maybe he's aware of the fact that this is a bit of a show to convince people that this is the height of our technology, or he has seen or heard of our anti-gravity electromagnetic propulsion and abilities to warp space and go faster than the speed of light.
Interesting. Interesting comment.
It is.
I mean, Maybe. Can we ask him? I'd like to know that. I'd like to know. Seriously, what you just said, that archaic.
Yeah, well, we've been held back. I mean, look at the progress we made early in the space program, and then look at how we haven't done anything really except to refine and add safety features to the system to get to where we are now. In August of 1979 at NASA, there was a man by the name of Alan C. Holt, and he filed a number of reports while he was at NASA on new kinds of propulsion. One of them was called a field resonance propulsion concept. And that, you can look that up. It's a NASA document, 80961, field resonance propulsion, August 1979. And this was a way to use space itself with pulsed electromagnetic waves and gravitational waveforms. Okay, gravitational waves, we're talking anti-gravity here, as a form of propulsion that would allow us to generate a warp around a craft so that we could bend space-time, that's what they called it then instead of the fine structure, and go many times the speed of light, which I've said for, you know, many, many decades here. I've published it in The Cosmic Conspiracy 1978 in the appendix notes there about how we can warp the space around us and around a craft particularly by pushing ahead like a donut type pulse ahead of us that curls around, you know, makes this kind of breast stroking shape around our craft. And it opens up a hole in the fine structure of space for us to fall into because the pressure of space behind us pushes it into it. And only in the last 2 years has NASA been entertaining this openly in the public about what a warp drive would look like. You know, the Star Trek concept of warp drive. It's to bend space around you so that you're not limited by the reflection of your pushing against space, because space is not a vacuum. It is definitely not a vacuum. It has mass. Dark matter is there for sure. And anyway, so when you look as far back as 79 in published work at NASA and see that they were working then on field resonance openly, and realize that in 1971, when I was inducted into the Teller's program, we were already working on anti-gravity, had anti-gravity craft before I even got there. And now you look at this picture we were looking at there of Bob coming into the space station, and that comment, which I can't find on the internet. If somebody can find it, that'd be nice. I'll put it up about this being an archaic form of propulsion that got him to the space station.
Stan, for people just tuning into this, or for people who have not, maybe new to this broadcast, I haven't heard you before. My apologies to people who have, what's the motivation for not, if we have the technology, why we don't use it? What's the motivation there?
Well, early in the piece, I guess it was, in the late 60s, I think it was. No, even before that, actually, in the early 50s, late 40s, our military and political leaders did make contact, or were contacted by beings from, not from around here, from, you know, some other location in space or in a parallel parallel universe. Before that, our leaders of the Allies had gotten together after World War II ended and had seen the dangers of using nuclear technology and other new technology that was developed by all sides during the war to have another global war between major powers. It would destroy the planet, end civilization. And so they were going to figure out a way, you know, instead of United Nations type thing, which people don't agree with, you know, everything going on there. And Hitler proved you couldn't force people into obeying a dictator. The French resistance had clobbered that. So the third alternative was to fool the people into a world government long enough for them to realize it would work. And by fooling them, I meant that they would generate a fake culture that had no religious, no financial, no political baggage. They weren't Catholic or, you know, Jewish or Hindu or Muslim or anything. They were from out there. They were going to create that blue beam type project, which would take years, if not decades, for them to develop, you know, hidden technology and build a fake culture. Well, in the late 40s, it might have been 48, I think was the first meeting where we actually met these beings that had been seen, you know, during the war by pilots and, you know, their craft zipping around and the squadrons of fighters and bombers, and they were called Foo Fighters. Well, they met these beings, and a deal was made. We realized that they were real. We didn't have to create a fake alien landing, but that such an interaction with an advanced society like that would create such, panic or like disorder, I think is a better word, in the human culture, that they had to do it in stages. They had to raise the public awareness across the entire planet to technology, to the possibility of life in other worlds, and how we would deal with an interaction with them and with their advanced technologies. Who would, you know, how would you have a job? What would you do in the new world order that would come from that? All these things had to be gradually introduced into the human psyche through movies and books, and this is what has been going on. Now, at some point, I think, according to the Bible, there will be a fake alien landing, which will pose as our Messiah or his people, and pretend to be, you know, from Jesus, and that it will be a fake. And we were told by Jesus himself in Matthew to beware of fake Christ, and especially if they tell you to meet them in some remote place, like in a desert or whatever, if this first landing of super intelligent, super developed technologies in a culture, if that first meeting does not occur right across the sky, you know, like a lightning flash from east to west, if it doesn't appear to everyone at once, if they don't just become instantly available, that's not going to be from our Messiah. It'll be a fake. And so even Jesus has warned us about this. So to do that, we need to have people think that our technology is at a certain limit, like I just said a few minutes ago, where we think that the best of our technology still can't equal these craft that we've seen, or people have seen and reported, thousands of people that have such extraordinary technology that they can zip up into orbit in a few seconds and not suffer structural fatigue or G-forces like we do. So
thanks for explaining that was eloquent in its, I mean, you did that very well, and thank you, because I can guarantee you people would be asking. So thank you for explaining that.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't know how far to go with that, but anyway.
That's really good. I mean, I think people need to be reminded of that, as well as one more thing. People say, well, it's either extraterrestrial entities or demonic entities, you know, coming through portals. It doesn't have to be either or, I suppose. Is that a correct statement?
Either or what? Sorry.
Okay. So when we look at these extraterrestrials, as they are identified as, some will say, well, no, wait a second. They're demonic entities. They're actually demonic, disguised as extraterrestrials. But I'm not sure we have to say it has to be, you know, just one or the other. It could be both. That was my question, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's.
Look, there are two sources. They're from a parallel universe. There was a war there, and maybe it's still continuing. It's going to be completed here in our universe. The rebellion took a third part of the beings of the parallel universe under the Creator, took a third part of them, and they were being cast down to Earth here for a final battle to resolve the challenge of authority that occurred between Satan or Lucifer and the Creator. So we're at that point, and you're going to see probably beings and craft from both sides here in the Earth, or some people will anyway. So which are the good, which are the bad? I think that when we get to that stage, that the rapture will have occurred, and the people who would have been fooled by this won't be here. The Christians who have been looking for the rapture, whenever that occurs, I won't argue that point here, but, will have been taken to safety, catching up out of here. The remainder, the beings that are from the Luciferian Rebellion, they will still be posing to the unwise, you know, the people who are uneducated into what is happening. They will be posing as our elder brothers in space from somewhere out there, or a bunch of somewheres, and they will start the New World Order. They will help us out of our threat of nuclear war, which we're certainly seeing develop right now as we speak, and our loss of crops from drought, which is happening right now, and from various biblical-type plagues with locusts and frogs and disease, pandemics, you know, COVID-19, all this kind of stuff, economic collapse of the world, all these things are driving us into the need for a global government that is fair. And that's what's going to be offered, but not by the true Messiah. And it certainly it won't be benevolent as it tries to bill itself.
Understood. And you connected that really nicely. Thank you. That's very good. Okay.
One of the other curves that we're facing here, which, you know, at this point, we can't really defend ourselves against, is asteroids, meteorites, large meteors that come into the atmosphere, like meteorites. The smaller ones, if we can detect them early enough, which we're getting better technology to do that, we can scoot them over out of our orbit for a while until we can destroy them, that kind of stuff. That technology is there with NASA, even with crewed rockets. With these new vehicles and that new technology coming with Satan as, you know, posing as angels of light, they are going to be able to deflect, you know, meteors, asteroids, or whatever, and say, like, we're taking care of you, but we've got the technology to do that. Don't worry about that. Can they control the sun? Not exactly. And if you look at slides 49 through 51 up there about ultraviolet, these are three different maps from today, from this morning earlier. About the UV concentration at this moment on the United States, and also the world. In the map that you're looking at there, you see those 11s and 12s. Those are extremely high, dangerous type ultraviolet levels coming from the sun. And I think these are going to get higher as we go along. If you look at map 50, you can see the contours instead of just point values that was in that first slide. You can see, and when you look at 11, 12, 13 on the right there on the scale, you see they're kind of very light blue. There are some spots in Arizona and West Texas and in southern Colorado that are seeing some of these hot spots that are so bad that they can cause cataracts, skin cancers, or whatever if you're exposed too long. And even sunscreen is not helping people with some of this stuff. And then again, if you look at slide 51 of the global distribution of this stuff, you can see that Central America and northern India, kind of western, well, that's part of Afghanistan and part of China, are extremely high, you know, between 16 and 18. In fact, some of them at 18. Now, why am I bringing this up? It is because the sun is becoming more active. And it's producing a brighter ultraviolet. And, you know, I'm sure if you go outside during these high UV periods, you will notice if you come from outside and go inside and go outside, the brightness of it will hurt your eyes. You'll physically feel a pain, like squinting pain. This is because we're getting more ultraviolet radiation through the shield, the ionosphere that has protected us for so many years, so many generations. This is thinning because the Earth's magnetic field is weakening. I've talked about this numerous times, and it's rapidly weakening so that the ionosphere is starting to thin and will probably disappear or be so thin as just not even be of value very shortly. Already last week I talked about the South Atlantic anomaly, a magnetic field anomaly, which has broken into two parts and has spread over Africa. Now, that anomaly occurs when the ozone layer over it thins from the magnetic field weakening. And so the magnetic field is weakening and splitting there into two pieces. And as I've said before, NASA has fluid model maps, like hydrodynamic maps of the core of the planet, showing that we have three pairs of north-south magnetic fields floating around inside the planet. And then up near the North Pole, there's one that's formed what they call a lobe, you know, it's splitting apart as well. And all these things are playing havoc with, you know, our environment. all linked to the sun. And last week, I think I did mention about the outer layers of the sun that are thinning. Now, when it gets to a certain point of thinness on the sun, it's going to blow off that thin shell, and we'll have a new type of set of nuclear reactions going on in the sun. And the light from the sun will change frequencies of it and be much brighter. Before, I've said that when it gets seven times as bright as day, that it might fry everything totally. This may be what's happening. It also may be later when the sun really goes through a phase state change and gets very hot in the infrared or heating frequencies. But it's possible, I think, in the visible light frequencies to be so bright that you hide from it and are not destroyed. That would be probably in the ultraviolet range and the shorter wavelengths, which would be very dangerous to your eyes, skin, and you know, crops and things like that, and animals. I do think we're seeing an increase, but not obviously seven times the normal daylight. But that is affecting our crops and our bees. We've put up, like some of the other gardeners here in the United States, we've put up 40% shade cloth over our raised gardens to protect the leaves of these plants. So, you know, the vegetables were growing because they were getting cooked by the sun. They were shriveling up, and it wasn't like heat overdose. It was like the ultraviolet killing the leaf. It made a brown splotch on it and killed it. So that's why we're protecting our crops and our eyes. I do suggest that if you're going to want to protect your eyes from cataract, which is one of the most common eye diseases in the world, caused by ultraviolet exposure and by aging, but ultraviolet from the sun really accelerates it. Get you some blue blockers, BLUBLOCKER sunglasses, which have a polarized lens in them and this kind of orange tint. I don't know if I've got one here. Let me just see very quickly. Yeah, there's one down there. Hold on just a second. This is what I got for us.
Blue blocker, right?
Is that backwards in your screen?
Yeah, it is. But
well, let me try this.
There you go.
How about that? Right, I forgot to push that little button. And this is what they look like. These are like these aviator glasses, that brown tint, and they're also polarized. I don't know whether that shows. No, you can't see it in that. But anyway. To me, that's one of the best investments you can make. And if you have prescription glasses, I'm sure there's some place online that you can buy clip-ons that flip onto your prescription glasses and shield your eyes. But you really need to start thinking about that because things are going to get rather tense for your body out there. Okay, article in slide 44. Now, if you click on the picture itself, first of all, that picture itself and blow it up, you'll see that, you know, earlier this morning, I think it was, it was early morning for me to pull it down, but it was apparently taken at around 3:08 Universal Time over in England. But this is a picture of the sun, most current one I had, showing in the upper left-hand portion of the top picture, a very bright area of magnetic sunspot activity, and another one coming around on the lower left side there, which is, in their terms, it's the eastern side of the sun in the solar physics term. Now, down underneath that is the same picture with the magnetic field lines drawn coming out of that spot at the top left and at the lower left coming out of that. And there are signs of other stuff behind it because of the glow. You can see in the periphery of the solar image. Now go back to that slide and click onto the article where it says the sun has been hibernating for years. It might be waking up. And this article, I won't read it all to you, but it's saying that we're seeing signs of, you know, the sun becoming more active, more solar flares, and perhaps, you know, more heat, more infrared coming from it as well. You can read the article in your time and see, but it's not just me saying this. This is from, you know, scientific articles being posted in the internet about the change in the sun itself. Okay. Let me just pull back here. A rather pretty thing when, well, let me first, let me go look at slide 43. The picture there is from satellites that are before and after, you know, they're ahead of us in orbit and some behind us in orbit, so we can get kind of a picture of all of the sun. On the right side, where it's black of that green image, if you put that up, Eric, the there you go. On the right side, it's because that satellite died and has not been sending us data for years now. But the other satellite shows us with our front own pictures and its image what is on the sun now and what is coming. So on the left side of that green patch, you'll see a bright spot in that kind of little dome-shaped portion of the green picture, and another in the center down at the bottom. Those are the two sunspot activities that we were just looking at in the orange photograph, but we're seeing it from kind of the backside of the sun there. Now, this is going to move to the right. You know, the bright spots here will move to the right over a period of weeks, and we'll make a complete transit of the sun to back to this point in 28 days. So you can estimate when it's going to appear in our visual spectrum, you know, facing the Earth. Watch this one to get a hint of when we're going to get potential solar flares and possibly EMPs from the sun during this cycle. Okay, now, and we'll go from there. There's an interesting shot at slide 46, which is it's quite rare. It's called an Einstein ring, and what happens is, you know, here on Earth, we observe various, you know, star systems and galaxies out there, and sometimes, very rarely, between us and say a bright light source like a supernova or like a galaxy, there will be a gravitational lens forming because of gravitational fields between us and that object we're viewing, and it will warp the light from that object into a ring that we see facing us. And this is, you know, it, this thing was buried, you know, in data, and there have been maybe 200 of these things that have been, you know, marked, labeled, et cetera, and observed. But this picture here, I forget, it was, I think it was back in 1987. Anyway, the picture got kind of buried, got lost in the files, and some guys dug it up in Hawaii and said, oh, look at this. This is from Chandra. And so the reason I'm showing is not only to show gravitational warping of light, and it's a beautiful warp, this perfect ring, but how, you know, how pretty it is. You know, it's kind of like an optical event caused by a gravitational lens. It's like a gravitational lens, like a camera would do, but it's just beautiful, beautiful. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys.
And by the way, folks, if you're just tuning in or if you're not familiar, if you go to standeo.com, that's standeo.com, click on the show images page, standeo.com, and you can follow along. And it's actually archived very nicely. So if you're watching this at some point in the future. And while I'm at it, on the page as well, EMP Shield. I got to mention that, Stan, because you're talking about the sun, EMP Shield, empshield.com/Hagman. And $50 off for an EMP shield. I think it's one of the best investments you can buy. That's empshield.com/Hagman for $50 off. And get yours today. I mean, seriously, you just saw it. I mean, look at the sun activity on this. Oh, my goodness. So who knows? empshield.com/Hagman. All right, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, there's an interesting thing here that may be linked to the sun. I think it is. It's slide 45. It says that thousands of species are fleeing to Earth's poles en masse, and a pattern is emerging. Now, I didn't even know we had people studying the habitat shifts of life forms on the planet. But it's not just animals they're studying, like, you know, marine creatures and you know, birds. Why their habitat is shifting toward the North and South Pole? They've been studying 12,000 species of bacteria, fungi, plants, and animals. I kind of remarked to Holly as I was looking at this article. I said, you know, how'd you be at a party saying, what do you do? Oh, look, I study fungi migration patterns. What a fun job.
What a fun guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Anyway, why is this happening? Let's see here. The amphibians are found to be moving up at about 12 meters a year. Their habitat is moving toward the North Pole here in the Northern Hemisphere. Insects, which are, you know, carriers of disease, et cetera, are found to be moving poleward at 18.5 kilometers per year, which is a lot faster than the amphibians. And we're measured in kilometers per year rather than meters. Excuse me. The life forms in the water will move at a different rate to those in the air and a different rate to those in the land. They've found this by studying all the data on these 12,000 types of life forms. Now, climate change, they think, is obviously forcing this, or to them it's obvious. And I think that they're correct. But the climate change, you've got to realize that it's not just pure human activity that causes the climate change at all. It contributes. Human activity contributes to the climate change, but the climate change is primarily driven by our star, the sun. And so already the animals, like they sense earthquakes and get out of the way early, they are sensing climate change, and they're going toward the poles for what? Cooler environments. Now, we're seeing this heat, this dryness, all over the world. I've talked about it last week and the week before about the droughts in North Africa, Northeast Africa, and portions of Asia, in India, and here, of course, in the United States. We're not going to see the immediate effects of this in our food prices until maybe 6 to 8 months from now, but we are going to see this. And this is due to this heating. Now, coupled with this extreme heating we're getting from the sun is creating weather patterns that are extreme. We're going to see 6 more named storms and possibly 6 more hurricanes as well, significant hurricanes in the hurricane season, which is already starting early, especially down around Florida. This is driven by increased heat in the water from the sun. Now, you could make an argument that it's something else doing it rather than just the sun. It might be what absorbs that heat. We know that certain types of microbes and small life forms in the ocean absorb this new band of ultraviolet that's been cataloged from the sun since 1992. And they get warm. They use that ultraviolet light to metabolize and to produce heat and to live. So that might cause some of the water heating in the hurricane areas of the Atlantic. I'm being fair about what might be causing this change in the climate, but the majority of the problem is the amount of solar radiation and the frequency ranges that are now coming upon the earth. And since the Bible in the Revelation of John speaks so much of the sun's involvement in judgments that God passes on to the planet or to the people of the planet, I think this is an important thing to keep track of every day or every week as you can. Okay.
All right.
Now, the situation in the Middle East between Israel and Iran and Israel and Saudi Arabia is very fragile. And, President Trump's peace plan with Netanyahu and Kushner, his son-in-law's efforts over there, are once again trying to get this peace treaty signed and to get Israel to take over the occupied territories, permanently, to take them from Jordan, take the West Bank and annex it to the Israeli, to Israel, to the landmass there. When they do this, they're going to need that peace treaty because it's going to almost certainly cause Jordan to want to go to war with Israel and Iran as well, using it as a catalyst for explaining why they're going to go to war with Israel. So we're right at the threshold within, I'd say, a year and a half maximum, that the war in the Middle East is going to have to erupt. I say a year and a half because Netanyahu has made a deal with Gantz, his opposition party leader, that after a year and a half, Netanyahu said, I will step down and turn let you be the PM of Israel. And we alternate every year and a half. So if Netanyahu wants to be the man that signed the peace treaty to, end all peace treaties in the Middle East with the Arab neighbors, he's got a year and a half to do it. And the annexation of these territories there in the West Bank is, it's got to be done soon to make that happen. And if we go to the
Do you think that'll
slide.
Happen? I didn't mean to interrupt, but do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, I think they'll try it. I do. Slide, what is that, 40-something here, just a second. Oh, where is it? Slide 47. Yeah, slide 47. It's just one of many stories that I've been watching over the last few weeks where the Israelis do an airstrike in Syria. Of course, that's where Damascus is, up there at the mountain range there. And Damascus will become a ruinous heap at some point in time overnight. And so I watch all these Israeli airstrikes in Syria against Iran-backed fighters with, you know, a fine-tooth comb. I want to see if that's what's going to trigger the destruction of Damascus. And then, of course, the war with Iran. The fighters killed, the Israeli fighters killed five foreign nationals, which were Iranians, in Syria trying to, you know, get a foothold and go into Israel through the Golan Heights. The situation everywhere is terrible. I mean, it's really not a good time for the United States to be having a civil war. We've got bigger problems than that, which will take the country down, will take our ally Israel down, if we don't do something rather drastic, rather quickly. Anyway.
The phrase, this sure is a bad time for a civil war in America. Wow, just think about that. Think about that phrase. Yeah, this is a bad time for a civil war in America. I don't know. That's when's a good time, number one? And number two, did you ever think you'd be saying that?
No. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking about it for probably 25 years, but I was a little bit ahead of the curve.
That's right.
And, you know, so. Yeah,
it's something. It's an interesting time to be alive. That's for sure. And we know how it. You know, the one thing that we forget. I think a lot of people forget is we know how it ends, and God is in control. And you said it when you came on. I think right before the audio trouble was. It's prophecy. I mean, this has been prophesized. So, and you can't really change prophecy, Bible prophecy.
You know, Holly has up on our main webpage, standeo.com, down under, where would it be, under prophecy in the left-hand column down toward the bottom in purple, it says prophecy. Perry Stone's did you hear that?
No, Perry Stone and then.
Yeah, my EMP video started to play from your site somehow or another. But anyway, I stopped it. Perry Stone's 2008 vision of five cities burning and people rioting in the United States. That's 2008. That was 12 years ago. And he documented it. He made videotapes, you know, video of it and, you know, and commented and wrote about it. And here we see that happening right now, what he saw in the United States, with this beginning of civil disobedience in the United States. So, you know, I follow Perry Stone stuff a lot. I might not agree on everything or the way he does everything, but he's a very bright fellow and a good prophecy teacher. And so you can click to that video and see the thing talking about the cities that he saw. And I just find it amazing that God is giving his prophets now then that much lead time, you know, for these terrible events. I mean, David Wilkerson, you know, who I think is switching to what was his thing? Switchblade and something. Anyway, his book. But anyway, David Wilkerson also gave prophecies that are happening now. So all of this to me seems to be God directed to our men of prophecy.
Very true, Stan. I want to say thank you very, very much for coming on today and for your gift of time and for always being on point. Really appreciate you. By the way, folks, support Stan Dale, Stan and Holly Dale. Go to their Patreon site. Go to standale.com, and from there you can access their Patreon site and support them. They do good work. Stan, you do good work. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that'll do it for me. And I want to wish everyone a good night. By the way, tomorrow we are going to be off tomorrow. That's Wednesday. We're going to be off tomorrow. But back on Thursday. Back on Thursday very strong. But watch Hagman Report Live nonetheless. for some updates. Have a good night.